ready to keep you company wherever you are. Carte Blanche, the podcast, brings you immersive, hard-hitting stories anytime, anywhere, every week.
It's the penultimate episode of the Whole Week Wrap, and there's a lot to discuss. Joining us this week is Business Maverick editor Nisa Moodley. Here's what's coming your way. Bullying BRICS. Trump says it's the dollar or nothing. Later, shrinking economies and shrinking inflation. We make sense of it all. Then, government sets its sights on banks and budget airlines. But why now?
I think it's more than likely that it's a precursor to justification for the establishment of a state bank through Postbank. And once that happens, I suspect those dubious parties who are not able to currently bank at any of the commercial banks are then going to find themselves housed more amenably at this, in inverted commas, state bank.
And why South Africans are semigrating to the Windy City. But first, as evidence mounts against the now former Minister of Justice, Thembi Simelane, analysts and various organizations are crying foul of President Ramaphosa's failure to act more decisively.
Welcome back to the show. It's always such a pleasure having you with us. How are you doing?
I'm great, Lizanne. Always a pleasure chatting to you too. Thanks for having me.
Now, let's get straight into it. And Thembi Simelane is out, or sort of. She's not entirely out. Last week, President Cyril Ramaphosa announced that the seemingly compromised minister has been removed from her role as justice minister, and she's now the Minister of Human Settlements. There have already been calls for her to be removed from that role as well, because clearly people are not happy with the way the president has responded to this. Firstly, it took him quite a while to respond to the whole Simelane debacle. And now many are calling Ramaphosa's decision to merely move her from one department to the other as, quote, lack of leadership. So let's chat about it. What's your take on the president's decision, and what message does this send to the people of South Africa?
So that's an interesting one. I think the ANC and the president's move is opening the party up for a lot more criticism, because, you know, they brought in that step down rule. And I heard somebody on the radio this morning saying, where is the step down rule now? Because you've just shuffled a cabinet and put her in a different position. That's not really a step down. It's like, I'm taking action, but actually you're not.
And in terms of just the messaging that it sends, considering government has been trying so hard to curb corrupt activities or alleged corrupt activities and ensuring that non-compromised individuals are within parliamentary positions, this really is a bit of a damp squib, really, if you think about it, because it doesn't really send a message to anyone except for us, the taxpayers, saying that it's just the status quo. We just continue as normal.
Yeah. I think even the people who have stuck by the ANC and tried to stand up for them over the last few years are kind of like taking a breather, like, wait a minute, what? We ran a cartoon that was really quite funny by Rico, who does the Madam and Eve cartoons. And he did one for us called The Milani Switch, where you see Cyril in a bulldozer sort of picking her up, Simelane, by a hook and just shifting her from one department to another. And Dennis Breitenbach is glaring at him and Cyril is like, what?
I love that. That is a perfect summary of exactly how this all looks. Now, of course, all of this stems from a really fantastic multi-part investigation. I think it's now currently on three parts, done by Daily Maverick's Paulie van Wyk and Kyle Cowan from News 24, in which they first exposed a questionable VBS loan. That's really where all of this started. And then in these recent investigations, they've uncovered so much more. And it seems like she really has been living the life. I mean, some of the bank statements that were published by Daily Maverick and News 24 is just mind-blowing. And one of the more shocking revelations for me was that Semelane allegedly spent 569% more than her known annual income, which just makes absolutely no sense. So yeah, the evidence is mounting, and I wonder if we'll maybe see another move from Ramaphosa in the next couple of weeks as he realizes he can't really hold on to her at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think he made the move or the switch after we published the first joint piece with Polly and Kyle. So it will definitely be interesting to see as more revelations come out, because it was a three-part series. Like, there's no running from this, and it's not going away.
Now, we've provided a link to the full series of investigations done by Daily Maverick and News 24 in the description of today's episode. It's well worth a read, so do go check it out as soon as you're done listening to today's episode.
Last week, in yet another late-night online tirade, U.S. presidential-elect Donald Trump took aim at BRICS. He posted on his Truth Social that, quote, "the idea that the BRICS countries are trying to move away from the dollar while we stand by and watch is over." Over being in all caps, of course. But is there reason for concern?
In short, Trump has said that any attempt by BRICS countries to either create a new currency or back another currency will be subjected to punishment in the form of 100% tariffs and exclusion from U.S. trade. It all sounds very serious. It all sounds very scary. But should we take Trump's threat seriously? What is your take on this?
So I think we've had a lot of rhetoric about Trump in the last few weeks. And in fact, I've had readers write into Daily Maverick, to the Business Maverick section, to say, can you please like slow down? And the problem, or the reason why there's been so much rhetoric, is because he just provides so much fodder for the media, because he's so outlandish and his statements are so outrageous. And I think this is just another example of something. And he sort of dials into this outrageousness because it somehow riles his supporters up in his favor. And I don't think this is actually something to be worried about, because DIRCO, our Department of International Relations and Cooperation, and even National Treasury have come to say this is not the correct narrative. They're not planning to create a new currency. That was never on the table. It's more that the BRICS countries were kind of saying, well, why can't we trade with each other in our denominations? Which makes sense. And it's not about switching away from the dollar in the way that he's taken it.
Yes. And look, granted, his understanding of tariffs in itself should probably tell us a bit more about his understanding on general economic matters. But that aside, this does feel kind of like a prediction of what's to come in terms of this very fine balancing act that South Africa might have to play under a Trump presidency.
Yeah, it's interesting because he's such a volatile personality. You just don't know which way the wind is going to shift. So I think Cyril and the other BRICS countries are kind of on their guard or a little bit weary now. So we'll be moving forward with some caution, probably.
Depending on who you listen to, South Africa's economy is either shrinking and we're headed for disaster, or we're on our way to enjoying a more stable economy in 2025. Whichever way you look at it, we're in for a much smoother ride in the months to come.
So I want us to look at both sides of the coin. On the matter of our shrinking economy, it came as a bit of a shock, it seems, looking at the headlines. I mean, some have even used the word shock and surprise. As a number of economists responded to the new Stats SA data that came out regarding the GDP that fell by 0.3% in the third quarter. Now, what is the main driving force behind this decline? And then can you tell us, is it reason for concern, or is this not as big as some of the headlines have made it out to be?
So I think the largest negative contributor was the agricultural sector, right, which saw growth drop by 28.8%, almost 30%, which is a massive drop. And on the one hand, you can understand why that happened if you've been following my colleague, Ed Stoddard, who is forever writing about climate updates and La Nina and El Nino and droughts. So there's a weather phenomenon called La Nina, which typically brings rains to southern Africa. And it hasn't actually happened when it was expected to. And now it looks like it might not happen at all, which means that we've had this major drought in the country. So when you look at it from that perspective, the drop does make sense. But then we have AgriSA who's come forward and they're like, oh, no, no, this is not right. This does not make sense. It doesn't tally at all with what we know to be true. So there are some queries around how StatsSA reached those numbers.
Several analysts have pointed out the many silver linings around this, that yes, it has shrunk in the last quarter, but actually a lot of the other industries and sectors have really contributed in a huge way to a growing economy. I mean, we've had the banking sector, we've had insurance and real estate, and then of course, less load shedding, that has also helped. So overall, it seems that analysts are saying, yes, this 0.3% shrink caught us by surprise, but actually it's not all doom and gloom.
Yeah, there's definitely glimmers of hope and pockets of resilience. And I mean, I think it's one sector and it's like a diversified basket of shares where one sector goes down, other sectors perform well. So in the end, you come out hoping to break even, or at least in this case, positive growth.
Now, I want us to just focus on food price inflation, because that's also part of this conversation. It's now at its lowest since May 2019, which is something we really need to celebrate, I think. Whether we'll see that in the grocery store is another matter, but we'll take a win when we get it. Now, some of the factors that contributed to this cooling off include India resuming rice exports. They imposed a ban, I think it was in July of last year, if I'm not mistaken, a ban on all exports. And then there was also the bird flu outbreak that really decimated the poultry industry in 2023. And it seems that the industry has largely recovered from that as well. So let's look firstly at the food price inflation, kind of what is the outlook in terms of that, but also what is the outlook just for the economy as a whole going into 2025?
So I think you're right. The inflation surprise in a good way, it's great. And the forecasts look favorable going forward. So at this point, I think economists are hoping that food price inflation will continue to slow towards the back end of 2025. But you have quite a good observation, Liz, because I mean, I had a reader write in after we ran the article about food price inflation being at its lowest level. And the reader was quite irate. And he said, I don't know what everybody's on about, because I've walked into my grocery store and prices are not coming down. They are going in the opposite direction. So yes. I think there's a lot of consumer frustration, and it's going to take time to see it sort of filter through to market level. And in the same breath, I don't know that retailers, grocery retailers specifically, are going to be dropping their prices in response.
Two big inquiries are on the cards as government plans to hold two major industries to account, so-called budget airlines and banks. From banking fees to airline ticket prices, it's all about to go under the spotlight.
Government has said they want to call them before Parliament. This is expected to happen within the first quarter of 2025. What are some of the key issues government hopes to address by calling these banks to Parliament and asking them to really account for these charges?
So Zwandile Masine, the committee chairperson for the financial sector, he says that they're going to be specifically looking at charges to individuals and to institutions of government. And then what I thought was quite interesting was the criticism that we have a limited number of banks in South Africa, and this creates an opportunity for high charges, which I would disagree with. I think, you know, in the last 10 years, we've seen a huge influx of new banks. And yes, there are some banks like Mercantile that have closed doors and moved away. But by and large, I think we're seeing more competition in the sector than before, and charges are actually coming down. So that's the one thing. And then the criticism that South African banks decide to open and close interest accounts for no reason at all, I think that is actually individuals and organizations who are querying the fact that dubious companies have had their bank accounts closed. And that's a risk issue. You know, it's as much as you jump up and down and say it's been closed for no reason, there is a reason why more than four banks would close all your bank accounts.
So what is the aim of this? Because as you've said, and as others have pointed out as well, is that the banking sector has become more competitive, costs have come down. So is this more a government's way of placating those who have been complaining about the banking sector? And this is maybe a follow-up on the whole conversation around loans and the allegation that banks are being discriminatory in the way that they approve loans. Is this maybe just part of that whole process and to really just say, we've done what you've asked, now leave us alone?
It could possibly be that. And in an ideal world, that would be the direction it would move in. But I think it's more than likely that it's a precursor to justification for the establishment of a state bank through Postbank. And once that happens, I suspect those dubious parties who are not able to currently bank at any of the commercial banks are then going to find themselves housed more amenably at this, in inverted commas, state bank.
That's a very good point. Now, I want to ask you quickly, when is the last time you had to book a plane ticket and how much did you cry before purchasing that ticket?
It was earlier this year, actually, and it was eye-watering. It was for my son and myself, and we needed to go up to Joburg for the weekend.
And it's crazy because I'm not even talking about the holiday seasons or anything like that. This is just normal pricing throughout the year. And from personal experience, I can also confirm it is ridiculously expensive. And I'm sure our listeners can also relate to this. Now, government has ordered the Competition Commission to do a thorough investigation into, quote, exorbitant ticket prices. This investigation will include budget airlines like FlySafair, Lyft, Kemair, and Airlink. But what is the purpose of this proposed markets inquiry? Because it's not a given yet. They've just said that they want an investigation.
Well, I think it's interesting because there was a good point made that all of these airlines were introduced as budget airlines. And if you look at the pricing now, they are anything but. Mm. And part of the reason for that is the shrinkage of the number of carriers in the sector. I think after Kulula closed doors, we were reduced to a very small pool. And that means scarcity, you know, prices go up.
Yeah. And what is your take on the theory that some have mentioned that this is kind of government's way of saying, okay, these so-called budget airlines have moved in on SAA's territory and that they're not happy with that. And this is their way of trying to clamp down on competition by means of this inquiry. What is your take on that? Is there any legitimacy to that, or does it seem more like a bit of a conspiracy theory to you?
I hesitate to say yes to conspiracy theory on airless. Well, it does sound a little bit convenient that just as SAA has finally jumped out of a 3.65 billion rand loss, it suddenly achieved a 252 million rand profit for the first time in more than a decade. And now suddenly there's an inquiry into all the other airlines in the market. It's just a little bit too convenient.
Semigration. The act of permanently moving from one location to another in the same country. In South Africa, for the last couple of years, the Western Cape has been the destination of choice for many seeking to escape city life. But it comes at a price. So, when Table Mountain is just too far outside of your price range, the friendly city is eager to welcome newcomers.
Not too long ago, we did a story on this, probably not even a full year ago, where the Western Cape was the place for Gauteng residents to move to. You know, as many sought out what they called the provincial governance that they liked. They said it was more stable there. And then the overall lifestyle, which was also a big draw card for many. But property groups have seen a gradual uptick in people now settling in the Eastern Cape, which I found very surprising. So why the Eastern Cape?
I spent a little bit of time in the Eastern Cape once upon a time, more than 20 years ago. And I have to say that particular city is quite a pretty part of the country. It's urbanized. You've got beautiful beaches that don't seem to have the problems we have in other parts of the coast. And I mean, where else will you get properties that range from 700,000 to as much as 23 million? It's like they've got property to suit buyers across the board.
And as you've said, it's far more affordable and you get a similar kind of lifestyle. And a lot of the estate agents said that several people from Cape Town are now moving to Gqeberha in the Eastern Cape. So I want to know from you, as a Capetonian, and considering you've already been in the Eastern Cape many, many years ago, would you consider moving back there at all?
No, I have to say I'm very firmly, happily a West Coast girl. And as much as the West Coast is quiet, I think I found PE's pace a little bit too slow for me.
I agree with you. It is far slower, far more chilled. And, you know, for me, Cape Town is already too chill. So so that's not an option for me at all.
So when someone from Cape Town says it's chill, it's too chilled, you know.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's unfortunately all we have time for this week, Nisa. As always, this has been a fantastic chat, and thank you so much for spending time with us this week. And I also want to wish you the most restful, joyful festive season, and I hope the new year is off to a beautiful start when it finally arrives.
Agreed, Liz. Thanks so much for having me on the show. I've 100% enjoyed our conversations. I'm going to miss them over the festive season. And here's to hoping that the festive season doesn't have any incredible news shockers and we just sail through with the minimum fuss.
Yes, please. May the gods be in our favor on that one.
Thanks for listening. Catch us again next week for another Whole Week Wrap. Until then, why not join the conversation on Twitter, Facebook, and everywhere else? We always love hearing from you.